RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
Another signing day is in the books. Second year now we've had signing day number two as opposed to number one. And like it was in year number one, it was a bit anticlimactic. But there were some interesting moves that took place. There was some drama, so to speak, if you're into that. A lot of people like signing day for drama. You know, I've noticed through different conversations that fans tend to like the drama on signing day. It's almost like anything else. It reminds me of NFL free agency in that when people re-sign their own players, that doesn't excite them. When they sign somebody else's players, they just think that's great. They love it. It's newsy. It's fun. It's something different. It's something to get a quote-unquote excited about. Well, when you flip a player on the last day and you get them to come to your school, fans tend to like that a whole lot. They don't seem to appreciate and enjoy what they have and what they've done through the first period. But it was an interesting day. So we're going to spend our time on that. I'm going to talk a little bit about Nick Foles in that situation with the Eagles, time permitting. Want to get into, though, the signing day, what it meant, what the teams look like. By the way, working on a complete recap, conference by conference, of how each recruiting class did. They're going to sum it up for you, evaluate it for you. So be sure to look out for that. And what we're going to do is begin to break down a lot of the players on your teams, your scouting reports on all the players. So look out for that coming up here in the next few days. We're going to put that to bed. And then we'll have that. That way you have an idea of what the players are. And, folks, I will say this. Don't get tied up into, you know, the rankings so much. We're going to give you an idea kind of how a team graded out what they mean. In terms of the number, the quality of players is really more the impact. The number of players you sign is dependent upon your needs, what scholarships you have available, don't have available. That is different. What you want is the quality. What's the quality of the players that you sign, whether you went in with the idea of signing 18 players or 28 players. That's the real difference. So we're going to get into that. Some of the things that stood out, maybe some of the things that jumped out during the day yesterday. Hope you had a chance to follow us on Twitter at Landry Football the entire day, as well as our tracker signing day with all the news that went on. We've got hit on some of the top ones that were news-making. Again, not as many guys announcing in the second signing day. So let's get into it. I think what jumped out at me, again, Alabama had the most impressive class. Maybe didn't win the day yesterday. But when you step back, and you look at their entire class, they have the most quality of players that would rank amongst the top, 300 players in the country. They have the best quality of that. And really, that is, I think, key when you evaluate how many of the top quality that combines the best of the group, and they did that. Again, how many you need, how many you will switch out on your roster to make available for more signings, all that's part of college team personnel. They were outstanding, and certainly they had a great get in Ishmael Softser from Amite High School in Louisiana, going into Louisiana and getting another player, of course, Nick Saban, with this program and his background in Louisiana, coach at LSU, so well respected by the coaches, high school coaches in the state. Not all that surprising that he was able to do it again. He is a big-time talent that can move very well for a big guy, but he plays with very powerful hands. And that was maybe the biggest get that they had. They lost out on a couple of other guys that could have been part of their class as well. It would have only built upon their lead, which, again, was as good as better than anybody's in the country. I think Georgia's class deserves mention near the top as well. Their biggest news for them was they were able to flip the Auburn commitment. Five-star receiver George Pickens, right there from Hoover. He visited on that January 18th weekend, and you know, when you lose a player, and of course, Georgia had lost a commitment back in January, back in late October, and they wanted to go after another receiver, and this is the guy that they targeted. And you got to give Kirby Smart a ton of credit, because what a job he continues to do with his ability to recruit and focus in and hone in on certain needs and identifying players and going out and getting them. We see that maybe the development, while good, is not quite to the level where Alabama is yet. Their ability to recruit is on the equal par of Alabama. An incredible job. The other thing about Alabama's class that is impressive is look at how many assistants left. Henry To'oto, the linebacker from California that did not go to Alabama, that ended up going to Tennessee, was in direct result of the fact that Tosh Lapoy, the defensive coordinator, who's nudged out of the door by Alabama, now is with the Cleveland Browns as a defensive line coach, that he was the guy that recruited To'oto and I think would have ended up definitely at Alabama had Tosh stayed there. But as we discussed that before, I think that putting Tosh in the defensive coordinator position a little too soon was a mistake Nick did make a year ago. Maybe Tosh would have, you know, in a different role, would have probably left sooner, but that was something that didn't work out, obviously, for him this year as a play caller overall. And they move on, and it probably cost him that player. But the point that I want to make is that you lose all those assistant coaches, and yet you still have the best class in the country, says an awful lot about the ability as a head coach to organize things and have things under control. That how do you do that, losing that many coaches? And by the way, Joe Panunzio, and we will have another wave of assistant coaches moving on. You can follow that on LandryFootball.com in my notebooks. But Joe Panunzio, the running back coach at Alabama, left last night. He is leaving to go to the Philadelphia Eagles. So to have that much changeover and to have the top class is incredible. Georgia's class, as I mentioned, they also beat out Alabama for Brett Seither, the tight end. Really, really good class. 24 commitments is outstanding. I was impressed with the job that Florida did and Tennessee did. They are not recruiting to the same level that Georgia is, but they're really doing a good job in their own right. They're getting good personnel without a doubt. And really impressed with Florida because you look at them, probably were around, you know, in the 30-ish range, going back to like early December. And, you know, they had a pretty decent early signing period. But the way they were able to flip a couple of guys away from Alabama, Chris Bogle, then they get Khalir Elam, who was thought by some to go to Georgia going to go to Georgia. Got him. He's a really good athlete that's going to be a good corner. That's very, very impressive to be able to finish as strong as they did and have a class that I think is well worthy of top 10. It says an awful lot. There's no question that Dan Mullen can go toe-to-toe with Kirby Smart on the field, game day. If he can get the personnel that's the equivalent, good things are ahead for Florida. Chris Steele, Jaden Hill were really good corners as well. You know, that's one of the other, you know, DBUs that we talk about. LSU's another one. Florida's done a really good job on their own. Tyrone Hopper at linebacker. And then Muhammad Diabate and Dewan Black, edge rushers, really good-looking class. For Tennessee, probably just as impressive was Tennessee. Great day, great class by Jeremy Pruitt. Getting Henry Toto was outstanding. Once it looked like Alabama was not going to get him, Washington was in pretty decent shape, or so they thought. Jeremy Pruitt outworked those guys, and what a great get for him. And that's a neat spot. It's a neat spot for Alabama. It's the one player they didn't get that really hurt Alabama because of the early impact he could have had for them. Also, Tennessee got Darnell Wright, top offensive tackle in the country, and the best remaining player. Brian Niedermeyer was outstanding for them, big key recruiter for Jeremy Pruitt. Corner Kenny Solomon was outstanding. Really good day for the Vols in the East. In the West, we'll get into it in the conference breakdowns a little bit, but outside of Alabama, A&M had a great day. LSU had a really good day. Ole Miss probably had one of the better days in terms of finishing. Of course, getting Jerrion Ealy, the great running back. Now, we don't know where he's going to go in terms of baseball or football. He's an outstanding Major League Baseball prospect, but what a explosive runner he is. Outstanding. The JUCO linebacker, Lakia Henry, getting him away from Arkansas was huge. Jonathan Mingo, the receiver, was really good. And they beat Auburn for defensive tackle Ladarius Cox. So really good-looking class for Ole Miss. I had some concerns about Maryland or, you know, the fact that it didn't look like Mike Locksley was going to have as much of an impact in this class. But, boy, did they finish. They finished strong. If you read the class breakdowns on LandryFootball.com, prior to signing day, we kind of talked about them, you know, being in the lower echelon of the Big Ten. But, man, did they have a good day. They got the quarterback out of New Orleans and Lance Legender, who many expected to go to Florida State. It's Lejeune, actually. Lance Lejeune. Cortez Andrews, the linebacker, got a really good JUCO offensive lineman in Paris Heath. And they also were still in the running for Nick Cross, who is maybe the most interesting story left remaining in this signing class. Nick Cross is an outstanding defensive back who is said to want to go to Florida State. He's not yet 18. His dad wants him to go to Penn State. Maryland is still in it. So we'll see where that ends up. But a sign that if Mike Locksley with a full year can begin to do some things at Maryland recruiting wise that hadn't been done there in ages, maybe ever. Auburn, good day. The loss to Pickens hurt. LSU, good day. The loss of Sofser hurt. But Ed Orgeron had a really good class. Gus Malzahn, not quite as good as LSU's, but good. Like the Charlie Moore and Mark Anthony Richards, love the Devontae for Auburn. Love the Devontae Lee signing. And I think Jay Ward's underrated for LSU in their signings. Ohio State, folks, don't buy into Ohio State had a bad class, because a lot of it is, you know, talk about, well, they're, where they're ranked. Again, understand numbers. Ohio State didn't have numbers. They only signed like 17. So their quote-unquote ranking is not going to be as good. The quality puts them right there with Michigan. I mean, in terms of top players, the quality, they're right there. Just because they don't have the numbers, it's because they have more scholarship guys. They don't need to replace as many guys. That's a good thing if you got that many guys coming back that are that good. So don't buy into that. Really good get for them in getting the kid out of Hawaii. Vimaha are really good. Daiwan Jones, they got two big offensive linemen. Jones can play tackle. And when you look at the quality and average rank for position, they're a top five class. There's no question about it. South Carolina, I thought that was another class that I was a little concerned about, that I thought had a great day. Will Muschamp, tremendous job. Jaquez Sorrells and Jamie Robinson were really good. So those are some thoughts there overall nationally. Let's take a look at the classes by conference. And we're going to break with some detail on LandryFootball.com with the detail of the players. But thought in the ACC, Clemson had that elite class. Very, very good. Got another quarterback that they signed out of Connecticut. It's really good. It was clearly superior than anybody else. Notre Dame's class was also would rank second in the conference if you were to put them Clemson and Notre Dame. If you put tie in Notre Dame to Clemson, as I like to, Notre Dame into the ACC, as I like to do, to give you a comparative measure. Florida State did not have a bad year, but it is not the type of Florida State class that they need or they've had in the past. The quarterback situation's a mess. Nick Cross has not been able to sign yet. Don't know where he's headed. Doesn't look like he's going to Florida State. Don't know. But it wasn't an awful day, because there's not a lot that they were expected that was a disappointment. But there's not a lot of good news in this class. For a guy that was hired for his recruiting prowess, Willie Taggart hasn't done a very good job. And on the field, we know it's been a disaster. Virginia Tech, solid class. Miami, solid class. We're looking at, you know, Florida State in that 20 range. Virginia Tech in that 25 to 30 range, as is Miami, as is NC State. North Carolina a little below. Virginia kind of in that 40, 45 range, as is Duke. Pitt a little closer to the 50 range. And then the out of the top 50 would be Wake, NBC, and Syracuse. Georgia Tech, tough year, as it normally is for new coaches in their first year. And that was definitely the case in Louisville. In the Big 12, Oklahoma and Texas, clearly very good classes that puts them kind of in that national rank in terms of top five in the country. TCU had a good class, but a big drop-off. We're talking about top 30 class. You know, 30, 35 would be TCU and Baylor with really good classes. Oklahoma State, solid job in that 40, 45 range, along with West Virginia. Iowa State's in that range as well. Good class for Matt Wells there. Kansas State in that outside of the top 50, just like Texas Tech, you know, and maybe a little lower in kind of that 60, 65 range. Kansas and Les Miles, tough go of it. They're going to have to recruit better, no doubt. But tough to recruit at Kansas, tough to recruit at Texas Tech, we know. And with new coaches, it was quite the challenge. So we'll see how things go going forward. In the Big Ten, a lot will be talked about with Michigan. I think Ohio State's class is as good as any, with only the limited number of players that they signed, the quality there would put them right there with Michigan, right there with Penn State among top classes. I think that you can make the case that Ohio State's quality is right in that range in the top five. Michigan definitely had a top 10 class. Penn State, top 15 class. Nebraska, a top 20 class, really solid class for Scott Frost. And finishing kind of in that top five of the Big Ten. Purdue was kind of a real winner. I mean, to finish in the top 25 recruiting classes at Purdue, it's really good. It's one of the big winners, one of the big surprises, if you will, nationally. Michigan State, kind of their normal class, good, solid class, top 30. Same with Wisconsin, same with Iowa. Then you bring up with Indiana, with their group, which is a top 40 class or so. They've got a good running back coming out of this. They got a flip, you know, they flipped earlier a running back that was committed to Ohio State. I thought P.J. Fleck did a nice job with this class at Minnesota, top 40 class. And then you got Northwestern in kind of that 40, 45 range. Maryland, I think, cracked into the top 50, which was not the case heading into the day. Illinois just outside the top 50, and Rutgers bringing up the rear in the Big Ten. Pac-12, in my mind, clearly Oregon, best class, top 10 class. Washington just outside of the top 10. When you look at some of their guys, Dylan Morris is a big get late. Fati Tutili of Hawaii was outstanding. Jacob Bandage out of California was really good. Cameron Davis, good-looking running back. A couple of good offensive linemen, and Julius Bulow and Sama Pama and Nathaniel Calipo, really good players. Got a couple of junior college guys, including the center, Corey Luciano. So it's good group for Chris Peterson. Disappointment for USC. For USC to be barely getting into the top 20 is not where that program should be, and the coaching hasn't been nearly what they needed to be as well. So that was a disappointment. And they're, quite frankly, not much difference between the USC class and the Stanford class. Really, really kind of close in that regard. Not much difference between them and, say, Arizona State, who had a pretty nice class in their own right, and definitely just outside the top 25. Cal had a top 50 class, as did Colorado. Disappointed in the UCLA class that was devoid of enough playmakers. I thought Sean Ryan and Duke Clemens were good signings at tackle. And I think Josh Carlin, another heavy offensive tackle class and heavy offensive line, got a good little quarterback out of Texas in Chase Griffin. But, you know, that's obviously a fit there that he likes. I just don't see the quality that I expected to come out of this recruiting class in his second year, Chip Kelly. Arizona, a little bit of a disappointment outside of the top 50. Washington State, you know, just in the 60 range, which is expected there, as the same with Utah and then Oregon State as well. The SEC, as we mentioned, Alabama and Georgia in that same upper tier, in that order as I see it. Then A&M, just outstanding classes, outstanding all top five classes in the country as I see it. Then I think you got LSU and Florida very, very close. I think that's a very good group. I think keeping, you know, in-state talent at home is critical for LSU. For the most part, they did that outside of Sofser. Florida, we discussed it, really great run for them. What an outstanding job. Tennessee getting definitely on the right track with Jeremy Pruitt. I thought Gus Malzahn's class was good, and I thought Will Muschamp improved as well. I think that, you know, Auburn's just outside the top 10. Tennessee, Florida kind of in the top 10 along with LSU. South Carolina top 20. Ole Miss kind of in that 20-25 range. That was really good, as was Arkansas. As was Mississippi State, which had a quiet day, but they kind of nailed their class early on. But in that order is kind of how I would see it. You know, Missouri's just not recruiting at a level that's good enough to compete anymore in the SEC. They're in that 30 to 40 range, as is Kentucky. Missouri's going to have to be like Kentucky. I mean, if you look at the programs are very similar in terms of they're going to have to be a developmental program. And, you know, with Missouri making the conference championship game a couple of times under Gary Pinkel early in his tenure, I think there's a perception that they can be better, but they haven't really done that and consistently. And so I think that they're kind of in that area, and that's where they're likely going to be. They're going to have to develop teams every 3 or 4 years that can be really good and have a chance. And then, of course, Vanderbilt kind of brings down the rear. We're going to have, again, a little more detail about these classes on LandryFootball.com as we got more time to delve into it and really break down the evaluation process of all these classes. Want to end it up today. Kevin asked about Super Bowl. A couple of things I want to do address, really. The Super Bowl, Kevin asked, what if the Rams had switched to 12 personnel, one back, two tight ends, with a lot of overloads, looks on early downs? Could this have had any success against the scheme? Well, Kevin, yes and no. If you're prepared to do that, meaning if you have the personnel to do that, which they don't have the two tight ends that are capable of blocking the physical Sam and Mike backers that the Patriots have. They're big and physical, so they weren't prepared to do that. When I say prepared, not game plan wise, although that's part of it, but personnel wise, they're not built for that. They're built differently. Could they have done some things differently? What they could have done a little bit differently was run a little bit more hurry up, a little bit more 2 minute, a little bit more, you know, before they got set. That would have been something they could have done schematically in the game that might have had some success. We don't know. The reason they did not do that is because they were never out of the game. They always had a chance to win the game. The game was not ever out of reach for them. But in theory, let's just look at it in theory. If you're built and you're trying to defend, or excuse me, you're trying to block a defense that's stacking the line of scrimmage, yes, you certainly running two tight ends. Now, the overload looks, it can help you there, but you're better off playing a little bit more balanced line and getting your defense matched up accordingly, because what you'll have with an unbalanced line, you'll have more numbers in the box anyway. So it's a little bit of a wash there, and you, quite frankly, I'd rather go in the two tight end sets. I wouldn't put two tight ends on one side. That's really not going to help you a great deal. They'll match it up accordingly. But there are things that they could have done differently schematically in the game, I do believe. They weren't prepared for that, quite frankly. The thing that the Patriots did so well is they got upfield, penetrated, and that's not what the Patriots normally do. They normally get upfield and penetrate and attack upfield. They just don't normally do that. They normally play at the line of scrimmage. They're physical. They play two gap, and they attacked upfield. And the reason why they did that is to defend the outside zone. It's a one cut and get downhill, and they prevented the downhill run ever getting started. They attacked it in the backfield. So they did a really good job, the Patriots did, and the Rams were not able to counteract it, mainly because that's what the Rams are. That's what they do. They don't really have a great feel for doing things outside of what their comfort level is and what their norm is. So that was the biggest issue there. Want to address a little bit of the Nick Foles issue, and we're going to obviously keep everybody up to date on the latest there. Been asked a little bit about what the situation is with Nick Foles. Where is he going to go? What should the Eagles do? And of course, by picking up the option, it creates a leverage situation for the Eagles. That's why they've made that move. People have asked me, why not just let them go in free agents? Why pick up the option? Well, the player can earn back, buy back his free agency and in his contract, that is. not just in general sense. The Eagles want to control where he goes. They don't want to see him in the division. And I think that Washington and the Giants are two strong candidates if he were to just be a free agent. They'd like to get him going somewhere else and have a little bit more control of it. So that's why they made the move. It's as simple as that. Where is he going to go? Where is he the best fit? Listen, I think that there are a number of places where I think he can help. I think the issue with Nick Foles is that he's very good, very decisive in getting the ball out of his hands. I think for the most part, he's pretty accurate. I do not think he's as talented as Carson Wentz. I recognize they won a Super Bowl with Nick Foles, and they made a little run to get into the playoffs last year. And he's kind of a, you know, a favorite son type of guy. I get that. If you study him and watch him, and if you did it all year long, there are limitations to his game that are not quite the same as Carson Wentz. So I don't think there's ever been, nor should there have been, any doubt about what two you would take if you had the option. I think that it's clearly Carson Wentz. Now, can Carson Wentz stay healthy? It's a fair question. I don't see any reason why he can't. I think you've got to be careful to not label guys as injury prone. You've got to, I mean, I know Tony Romo was that way towards the end where he could not stay healthy. And that always is a possibility. But if you've done your due diligence internally, and I certainly don't have access to the medical information there. If you've done your due diligence, then the expectation should be that he should be fine. And if rehab correctly, they've got their quarterback that we're talking about. 2 years ago, Carson Wentz was the MVP of the league in his second year. What we talked about with Patrick Mahomes this year, people were talking about with Carson Wentz a couple of years ago until the injuries took place. So let's not forget that. And I think it's people are losing sight of that a little bit. So I think that the Nick Foles situation has played out about like I expected. And we'll see. Reminder again, if you haven't joined LandryFootball.com, take advantage of it. Take advantage of our postseason special. We've got an opportunity to get involved, get all of our scouting season information, recruiting information, free agency, draft, all the movements, all the evaluations of the rosters as they evolve and change in the offseason. You know, it is to get ready for the football season, you know, just like teams do, doing the work I do for teams. This is what we do this time of year to get ready for next football season so that when we're talking about, you know, this team or that team, we're talking about what they can or can't do based upon what they did in the offseason. So stay on top of everything with the news and notes of what's going on, but more important, the scouting analysis of what's going on with each team. Whether you're a college fan, whether you're an NFL fan, take advantage of it. You can catch this podcast every Tuesday and Thursday, the Rush to Field podcast on Wednesday. And don't forget to sign up for that War Room newsletter. You can get that. Go to LandryFootball.com, click on War Room, send us your email, and we'll get you set up with the newsletter that comes out every Friday now. It gives you some nuggets that's not available for publication, as well as get you updated on what's going on the website. So check us out at LandryFootball.com and take advantage of that postseason special while it is still there. We appreciate you joining us. Have a great weekend. I know it's going to be the first weekend that we've had no form of football. Actually, we've got Alliance of America football, and I don't know how much we'll get into that because my involvement with the NFL and obviously with college, we'll keep our eye out on it. I've been informed that my work will be limited to just as players emerge and develop, I'll get access to the tape and time permitting, usually in the off season, a little bit further into the off season, I'll look at some players and provide some of that information, evaluations to the teams that I work for. But outside of that, we may cover some things on the website that might be interesting for you. So we'll do that. But I was getting ready to say enjoy your weekend without football. If you're interested, there is Alliance of America football starting this weekend, I believe. So have a great weekend. Send me your questions. If you got something you want me to address here, send it to contact Chris, and we'll address it here in a future edition of the Landry Football Podcast. Back to work and getting you all the recruiting information digested and put up on the website and the breakdowns there. And soon behind that, free agency draft stuff coming. So follow us on LandryFootball.com. Follow us on Twitter at LandryFootball. Have a great weekend, everybody.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
This is an MMA report with Jason Floyd, Quick Fix, on Radio Influence.
Daniel, UFC Fortaleza this past weekend was on ESPN Plus. It was the first card on ESPN Plus I did not watch live. This one I watched live, and it was such an enjoyable experience. And the best way I would describe it is, you know, during the Fox era on the UFC, to me, it was about filling up time, and these cards just dragged on. But as I was watching that fight card on Saturday night, I felt like I was watching, like I was watching the Magic play, or I was watching the Knowles play, or I was watching a football game, an NHL game, where it was, we know you are here to watch a sporting event. You are not here to listen to us talk. And it seemed to me that I guess the way they formatted that show was the prelims was the first half. The transition from the prelims to the main card with the main card opening was halftime, and then the main card was the second half. It was such a great pacing of the event, a very enjoyable experience. Kudos to ESPN. Kudos to the UFC for that pacing. And, boy, I hope some other MMA organizations kind of look at what ESPN's doing.
Yeah, man. I tell you what, this move to ESPN, there is a lot of no-brainer things ESPN is doing with these broadcasts. That is really making watching the UFC a more enjoyable experience. I mean, I tell you what, I did not anticipate that this weekend, Jason, I would have had more fun watching UFC Fortaleza than watching the Super Bowl.
The MMA Report with Jason Floyd can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.